Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight I have Brian Ketcher, author of Almost Perfect, winner of the Stonewall Book Award for Youth and Children for 2011. Brian's book, as if you've been reading some of my tweets, blogs, and emails, is about a young man named Logan Witherspoon who meets the girl of his dreams on the rebound, and she has a big secret. Brian, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here.
Okay, the first question is, Brian, you're a straight man living in central Missouri. How did you come up with this book?
I knew that was going to be the first question. That's always the first question. When I set out to write a book, I didn't set out to write a transgender book or a gay book. I wanted to write a book about two teenagers in a complicated relationship, and I bounced back a lot of different ideas, and I don't know what made me settle on it, but I thought, what if the girl was a girl mentally and pretty much physically, but maybe not by birth? Would they be able to get over that hurdle? And that forced me to do a lot of research just into a subject I'd never really given much thought to.
Where did you get your research? Where did you do your research?
Well, it's pretty much all on the internet. I just went to discussion pages, chat rooms, facts, just where people, transgender people, talk about their experiences, what they went through, the hurdles, how they were accepted, how they were not accepted. And most of the time, I didn't even have to ask any questions. I just read people's stories, listened to their lives, and found out what they had to go through to achieve the gender that they feel is appropriate.
Great. School, obviously, you didn't write this with a nom de plume. Brian Ketcher is your real name. How's it gone over here at your school? I'm sure people know about it, other teachers, some of the students, parents. How's that working out?
It's working out quite fine. I'm actually at an elementary school, so none of my own students have read the book, but my coworkers have been quite proud of me. A lot of them have said they've read and enjoyed my books. I was written up in the local paper and hardly a stir, so I think if people had any problem with it, they really kept it to themselves.
Good. That's great. That's wonderful to hear. I think we've come a long way. Let me talk a little bit about the book and ask you some questions. The book is obviously written for a teen audience. What you say, 12 and above, 13 and above, 13 years old and above?
I would really say 14 and above, high school age. When people ask me, is it okay for a middle schooler to read, I usually say that depends on the student. If they're mature, if they can handle a topic like this, by all means, but use your best judgment.
Okay, cool. Anyway, it's written, and it's a really – I know sometimes I was reading it in the middle of the night and I started like laughing out loud and woke up my partner. you have a great sense of humor. Let me just tell the audience one of the jokes. Logan is, I think, probably a senior, and he is, I guess they're he's running track, and he's in one of the scenes. I'm not reading directly from the book. I'm just doing this from memory. He's looking out at the cheerleaders, and he's at Boyer High School, which is, I guess, Boyer is the rural town, and Columbia is the big city, I guess, 20 minutes away or 20 miles away. And he says, well, in Columbia, the cheerleaders would be really hot and probably the cream of the crop. In Boyer, all they needed to do was bend at the waist and have four working appendages. I just roared. I mean, just thought that's a 16, 17 year old, and you captured it. You did a great job. Now you said you teach at elementary school. Where'd you get the voice of a 17 year old boy?
Well, a lot of people who know me say I never stopped being a 17 year old boy. I'm a teenager trapped in the 35 year old's body. I just, in both my books, I looked back and thought, what would people have said in that situation? How would they have reacted? A lot of teenage boys are, you know, kind of crude when it comes to talking about the physical attributes of cheerleaders, and so I didn't gloss over it.
No, you didn't, and that was just one of a dozen pretty funny little things that you smirked, saying, "Oh my God!" I know your background. You don't have a teenage son at home, so this is really probably you. You and
your Yeah. It's
Well, I mean, go ahead.
I was just saying, with this book, and especially my first book, people who knew me in high school say, "Yeah, that's very obviously you as a teenager."
Right. I'm going to just ask, have you heard anything from the transgender community on this?
Especially since I got the Stonewall Award, I have heard from a lot of individuals, and about 99% of them say I got the voice right, which makes me feel so good, because it was just my fear when I wrote this that people
right.
had gone through this would read it and say, this guy obviously doesn't know what he's talking about. He's he's just telling a bunch of things that aren't true. So I was so happy when people said I portray Sage in a realistic way.
I think you'd actually did better than I did. I'm going to share with you something I didn't share with you. We had a little warm-up talk here. Every morning I put out a little blurb getting people to see the show on my Facebook account. And this morning I just happened to decide to take a quote from the School Library Journal, December 2009 edition, review of Almost Perfect. And the very first sentence of the book is, of the review, I'm sorry, not your words, but these are the words of the reviewer, a small-town Missouri boy's world is rocked when he falls for the new girl at school, and she eventually confesses that she is a biological male. Period. And then I, said, listen tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central on Blog Talk Radio. Well, I got a little note from a transgendered male who happened to be a friend of mine, who gave me a little short discourse on how I had offended some people in that sentence twice. And then sent me to the GLAAD, Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, has I never realized I was defaming anybody, has a website on how to, a stylistic website on how to call these things. Evidently, the word confess is not to be used when you speak with transgender people. And biological male is another offensive term in that transgender, and you did not do this in the book. You always referred to them as transgender male or transgender female or transgender people, but biologic male is actually offensive to the transgender community. I found out today after, being out and gay for all these years, because the past, they want to focus on the present, not the past. So the correct term is transgender male or transgender female, and not focus on what their sex was at birth. Wow.
I've heard that before, and I've heard people say you should refer to people XYZ or ABC, and when I wrote the book, and whoever wrote that review, I think that what they were just trying to do was let the population
sure.
at large know Sage's status. I think if they had said a transgender female, they might think, so was she born a woman and wants to be a boy, or was she born a boy and wants to be a girl? I'm confused.
Right, I agree. I didn't catch it. Honestly, I was totally ignorant of the fact, and somehow, I feel like I'm a little smarter now. But I did some research this afternoon on there's actually a name there. There actually is a name for what when you aren't aware of transgender things. It's called cisgender, and that's people who have not been transgendered, and we live in, like, for example, white privilege. People that are white don't know what it's like to be black, and there's a term in the transgender community that people who are not transgender can never understand what it's like. How did you do it?
It's funny you mention cisgender. I got in a flame war on Wikipedia about use of that term in articles, but I guess that's neither here nor there. Understand what it was? I mean, I don't understand what it's like to be transgendered. That's not something you know, you can experience secondhand. But I just, I try to get as many real life stories as possible. I try to read people's stories, not just the psychology behind it, but what people went through, what it was like when, for instance, somebody's parents actually told them, I'd rather you be dead than change
right.
your gender. You are not my son anymore. You're not my daughter anymore. You're sick. You're a pervert. And not just the negative things, people
right.
do have a chance to live a happy, fulfilling life as the gender that they belong to.
That's exactly right. And if you look at the novelists, and this is a novel, I don't know the gentleman's name, but the famous book She's Come Undone is about it's written by a Jewish man that's the English professor at Rutgers, and it's about a coming of age book about an African American female, and you know it's kind of like you know that and it's called She's Come Undone, I think. Anyway, this is very common in good novels is that the writer is not necessarily of the minority or majority of the person he's writing about. That's the beauty of being a good writer. Let me talk about your other book. There's a book, a prequel to this. It's called A Playing with Matches, and I love that one too. I'm going to talk about that book is more I would say it's more of an anti-bullying, more of a accepting book, wouldn't you say?
I'd like to think so, yes.
Yeah, at this point, yeah, and so I really think the books, the two books that I've read of yours, and I hope there will be a lot more in the next few years, really have a whole genre of what would you do if this person was in your school? What would you do if this person came into your circle of friends? I don't think the books are that different, by the way. I'm sure you know they look. Go ahead.
I agree. Sometimes I feel I wrote the same book twice.
Well, of course. I mean, they're going to appeal to different audiences. I just happened to have read one and said, I want to read his other book. So I got the other book. And I said, yeah, it's kind of like another version. But you know, a librarian's job is to put the right book in the right person's lap at the right time. And, boy, I can see these two books getting slapped in kids' laps by very sensitive teachers and ministers and rabbis and social workers. I hope this, you know, using I hope this gets out, and I know that the American Library Association Award is going to help that. But we talked about this earlier. I'm a 61-year-old openly gay man, and I realized I was gay at age 12 or 13, and I went to the library to find out more about it, and I found these horrible, horrible books that I was a pervert and ingrate. Just a sick, mentally ill person. I found the DSM-3, I think it was back then, or DSM-2, which was a listing for psychologists to categorize my illness. I was mentally ill at 12. I found out I was mentally ill at the library. I was a precocious child. That did not help my self-esteem or anything else. If your books were available, my whole life would probably have been different. Have you heard that before from other people? Have you had these little testimonials by email or by contact?
A lot of people, when I was researching this, that's a very typical story, that they, when they felt that they were in the wrong body, that they were growing up as the wrong gender, they went to the library because the internet did not exist back then, and all they could find were these old psychological tomes. And basically either they were very wordy science language or they just said, you pervert, you sick, disgusting weirdo. And, 10, 15 years ago, they wouldn't be giving a quote-unquote gay award to a book for young people. And now it's just that there's a whole section in the libraries, a gay lesbian section for teenagers, and I think it's great that somebody who's just questioning, somebody who wants to know more about their sexuality, can read a novel and think, hey, I'm not the only homosexual in the entire universe, like
right.
I'm sure you felt.
Oh, God, I was the only one. It took me years to find another one. Of course, this is before the internet and before, you know, I lived in the suburbs. I couldn't even go to the big city to find any sort of support. And you know, there is a lot more support now. What would you like to see changed as far as youth or teenagers getting information safely and correctly? I know you have a wonderful, I'm going to talk about this now, in the back of Almost Perfect, you have a wonderful, I'm calling it a warning page. It's not really a warning page. It's information on, on what to do and talking about the internet and not giving your full name and being very careful to meet people. And you gave some great websites. Can you talk about some of those?
I teach computers. I used to teach computers to junior high, and I was always getting on the kids, don't give your name. Don't say where you live. The people on the internet are not who you think they are. And I would just hate for someone who's trying to learn more about their sexuality to talk to the wrong person, if you know what I'm saying. So I did my research. I got the PFLAG website, Parents of Friends of Lesbian and Gays, GLAAD. I'm trying to look at the book here, the Gender Public Advocacy Coalitions. Just a lot of places of people who have been there, people who can talk to you anonymously. You know, you don't have to give your name. You don't have to show your face. You don't have to really say anything, but they can get good information now, which 20, 30 years ago would have been impossible.
It is impossible, yeah. But there, you know, there's also a lot more hate. The thing that I'm scared about with the internet is, you said you were flamed in Wikipedia. I was flamed on Facebook today. I deleted the whole thing because I was too upset about it. I'm still very sensitive to this, to being flamed. Anyway, I should get used to it if I'm going to be doing the show for long. But, I mean, that's my fear, that the internet is a wonderful tool, but it can really, if somebody gets a hold of one of these kids, even anonymously, and starts flaming or calling them names or telling them things, that's what I'm afraid of. And there really isn't any policing on this, is there?
There is not. And, you know, there was a horrible case in actually my hometown where some adult made a fake Facebook page and told some neighbor girl, why don't you just go kill yourself, and she did. It is dangerous. What if somebody comes out online thinking they're talking to someone who understands, and then it gets all over the school at a time they're not comfortable with? That is something you have to be very, very careful about.
Right. I mean, it is in order to be that wide open, there are some pitfalls and pratfalls and stuff like that. I was very glad that you put that in the back of the book, and I don't want to really go into any of the other things because I don't want this to be a spoiler or anything. But I want to talk about one more thing, and then see if there's any questions. The chat room is full, but nobody's talking. They're talking. They're not even talking to each other. There's just people in there. Listening to me and you and I, sorry. So many books about transgender teenagers and stories about them end very badly. The stories, I mean, of course, a lot of them are based on truth. I'm thinking, of course, of the Brandon Tina Brandon movie, Boys Don't Cry, and some others that have ended very badly. And you kind of like, yes.
You're cutting out there.
Yeah. What did you give us at the end of the book? What do you think you gave us?
I'm sorry. You cut out there. Could you repeat?
Okay, no problem. The internet's weird tonight. We're having wind here. The end of most transgender teen books don't end very well. They usually end in death or murder or suicide or some horrible ending to the hero or heroine. Your book doesn't do that. Your book has a different ending that I was surprised. I was kind of waiting for a bad ending, and it never came. What did you want the ending to mean? And without giving it away, if you can.
Well, I really, really wanted the mega happy Hollywood Technicolor ending where all the problems go away and they live happily ever after. Mm-hmm. But the more I wrote, I realized maybe that wasn't in the cards. But I didn't want to give the depressing, Sage just can't make it, her life is in the toilet, nobody understands, Logan failed her. I didn't want that either. I did not want people to read that and think, wow, what a downer. Is this what's in store for transgender youth? And I went back and forth with my editor a lot about that. But I like to think I came up with an ending that it's more hopeful than hopeless, that Sage will become the woman she's destined to be. Mm-hmm. And Logan screwed up, but he is a better person for knowing Sage.
All teenage boys screw up.
And that's what I think when the people criticize me for making Logan not being very understanding. I think, well, it's not because Sage is just transgender. Maybe it's because he's a teenager, and he's going to mess up, and he's going to do the wrong thing, and he's going to not treat the girl right and regret it later.
Exactly. If this girl were an Asian or physically handicapped, this teenage boys would probably, especially in his situation, the rural, single parent, he would just kind of screw up and close down and run off. I mean, I have a son. He did stupid things when he was 16, 17, 18. He does stupid things now. But, but I think men do stupid things, or women do stupid things too. But I think men really have the keen edge on stupid things. That's just my personal opinion. Gay or straight?
Yeah, sometimes I want to go back in time and kick my own butt for some of the things I did.
You and me both, brother. that's a huge one. But yeah, let me tell you what I at the end of the book that I thought, and I'm sure you didn't think of it. Maybe you had. You've got a sequel coming here.
Oh, I've been asked for a sequel more times than I remember, and I have just I bled Sage and Logan dry. I got nothing else I can say about them without just rehashing the same plot over again.
Okay, I just thought that. I mean, I do agree with you. You used the word hope when you were describing the end of the book, and you did give both of them hope. I mean, I think that's that's what I saw in the book. And then as I'm turning pages at the end, I'm going, okay, that's a good ending, but there's going to be a sequel. He's writing a sequel.
Unfortunately, no.
Okay, well, it doesn't matter because, as I said, your other book is another one of those similar books. What's your next project?
I'm doing the final editing on my third novel, which is tentatively called Playing Dice with the Universe, and I'm writing from a girl's point of view for the first time, so that'll be interesting.
Very cool. And is it based in a high school, or is it in, are we still in Missouri, mid-Missouri there?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of stuck in Missouri. Stephen King's stuck in Maine, I'm stuck in Missouri. It will be happen in a suburb of St. Louis again.
I'm from suburban St. Louis, and you're from the same area. It is a very colorful place to be from. That I live on the East Coast now, where it's all just people from New York and people from Detroit and people from big cities, and you have to go. Of course, where I live, you cannot even go and find the rural areas for almost 100 miles now. And of course, when I go west, I hit a swamp, so I can only go north. And it takes a while before me to get to a rural area. When you live in Missouri or Kansas or Iowa, Nebraska, when you live in a rural town, the big city is such a much bigger difference. It's like Oz,
Oh, that's the truth. My wife, she grew up way in the country, and she still talks about going to town when she was little. And the town was Moberly, Missouri.
Yeah, I know where Moberly is. I've north of Columbia, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think that makes for more colorful novels than just living in New York City or Miami or Los Angeles or a big city. I think when you get that dichotomy of what it's not really urban-rural, it's all rural to some people, but when you're, just like you said, your wife going to town, it was a huge deal, and you look different. Logan looked at Columbia cheerleaders differently than he looked at Boyer High School cheerleaders, and I just think that makes for, I mean, the rural district, rural areas make for better fiction because you have to use your mind, of course.
I like it. I mean, I live in a rural area, so it was easier to write than living
sure.
in a big city.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, and I, as I said, it made the whole thing more colorful. Logan has a very, very good sense of humor, and of course, this is told from Logan's point of view. And that was what the most fun was about reading this book, especially as a main because I could see I never felt that he was acting the way he was acting because he was because Sage was really a man, was really a boy, or grew up, it was really a boy because she had not had her surgery yet, but I always felt it was because he was just totally socially inept. Like me.
And that is what I was going for, yes.
You made it. You got it. Okay, listen, we are at the end of the show. Let me just do a little plug for your book. If anyone's listening to this, even if you're listening to it archive or listening to it live tonight, if you go to the show page and you see the large picture of Almost Perfect, it has a small little pink triangle upside down on it. If you click on that, you'll go right to the Amazon.com purchase page. Brian and his family would love it if you bought more books. That's number one. Number two is I want to do my plug for the Stonewall Library and Archives. They're not really my sponsor. They're my little that's been my volunteer job for the last 10 years. I've been a board member, board chair, and now I'm on a development committee for America's largest gay and lesbian lending library. And we do tours, touring exhibitions on all sorts of things. So in your town, you can look for stuff. We have actually had an exhibit go to Columbia, Missouri. But we send exhibits all over the country. We're at stonewall-library.org, stonewall-library.org. And just get on there. We have 20 programs a month. If you're ever in Fort Lauderdale, drop on in, and we're coming to the end of the show. Brian, do you have anything to say at the end?
No, I just did. It has been a pleasure to be on your show, and I just like to thank everyone who's read my books and responded so positively to them.
Great. Listen, I want to thank you for being who you are. I mean, as I said, you probably don't know it, and it probably won't happen now, but it may have already happened, but you probably have saved a life. I'm saying this from a person who's had friends that have committed suicide and had read about too many teen suicides. One-third, this is for the audience out there, this is just a factoid that you don't want to hear, but you're going to have to hear it. One-third of all successful teenage suicides have to do with gender identity. One-third of all successful teen suicides have to do with gender identity. So this is what we're talking about. This is a big deal. Okay, Brian, thank you very much, and good night.
Good night. Thank you.